Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And you know, it's this favorite time of the week that I have here, coming and meeting with you and sharing with you and hoping that you'll share with us. And of course, I've got my favorite companion here.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Wow, that sounded serious.
Oh, I'm very serious tonight.
Yeah, he's got a serious case of Richard tonight. I thought I could get him
more
to live.
Than this, I tell you.
I thought I could get him to live. Anyway, if you get our newsletter, you know that tonight I wanted to talk about my journey and about Richard's. Now, I don't know if Richard's going to talk about his, but I'm going to talk about mine. I think he's going to talk about his. And there is a reason for that. I remember when I first started out how insecure I was about doing what I do and, you know, working with spirit, hearing into the next world, bringing forth spiritual gifts, transferring energy. So much of this seemed so foreign to me. And I also remember in the very, very beginning, I had a lot of friends who could do all these things, and I wasn't yet at that point where I could. I had friends who would get messages from angels, angel messages, and help other people and tell them what they needed to know at a particular time in their life. And I just thought that was wonderful. I also had friends who were great healers. Oh my goodness, the things that they could do. And there I was at the time. Zero. As far as doing any of this. And I remember I thought a great deal about crystals. I wanted to work with crystals, and people would say, well, you got to connect with a crystal. Goodness, I didn't know what in the world that meant, connect with a crystal. And it was this big blank, like, I can't do any of that. And so it's the end of a year, and looking back, the work that Richard and I have done, I just see all the people that we have helped. And Richard wouldn't talk about this, but he is just so magnificent with how he relates to people, the things that he teaches them, the help that he brings forth. And I'm just aglow with his praises, of course. And if you know Richard, you know just how wonderful he is. I don't see his face right now, but are you blushing a bit?
Who, me? No, never.
Okay, he's not blushing. But
I was just thinking some people perhaps don't agree with that perspective.
So this is like a time when I wanted to talk about what we do, better yet, how we do it, and even better yet, I want to tell you that you can do all these things too. You see, we all have these particles from source, are all there is, and what we illustrate are spiritual gifts. Each and every one has the ability to do what we do. And that perhaps is the message that I want to relay to you. If you see us at work or have been the recipient of some of the things that we have done, I want you to know that you can do it also. And that's what this show is about. Talking about our journey, talking about how you can take advantage of your spiritual gifts and use them, bring them forth for in the new year, and answer questions. And I see, my goodness, we haven't even talked too much yet, and we got a caller on the line. And you know what? We're going to take her question, Richard.
Okay.
This is Maggie on line 3. Maggie, what can we do for you, dear?
Well, hi, guys. How are you doing? I'm glad to hear you sound like you're feeling much better.
Thank you.
I'm glad. Question. Well, I was kind of waiting to hear what you had to say about tonight or tonight on this call. But my question, I guess, is what I want to say is the amazing difference that I see from just last week, from the 21st to now. And I had an amazing synchronicity day today, or whatever the word is. But anyway, everything is flowing so incredibly now in my life. And it's been very rough for the last 3 years as I'm a realtor and was in new homes. But, okay, I want to know, are we going to experience a lot of earth changes coming up within this year? Are we going to feel a lot of diff changes? Because I heard last night something to the effect of, well, of course, if the earth or the vibration is changing, yes, the earth has to change. So can you give me your take on that?
Well, I'm going to discuss a little, and then Richard will come in and correct me.
Okay.
Of course.
Sounds good.
Do you attend any of our conference calls that we do monthly with the masters?
As many as I can, because I work 70 hours a week.
Well, what I'd like, well, so that's amazing. First of all, that's amazing right there. I bet you take out a lot of Chinese carry out, don't you?
somehow I managed to cook some good meals, but because I have to have leftovers. But anyway, that's okay.
Anyway.
That's okay.
If you have listened to some of the calls, you would be aware of a couple things that the masters have spoken a lot about earth changes, about such things that we are seeing right now. There's been a lot of fires. There's been stepped up earthquake activity. Volcanoes seem to be simmering in some areas along the Ring of Fire. Let's see. And carrying that, you didn't ask about earth. You just asked about earth changes, but I also see a change in human behavior on a lot of levels.
Right.
In other words, there is an imbalance here. Those who seem to be walking a spiritual path of some sort are becoming more certain of themselves, it seems, and are enjoying changes towards the better. There are other people who seem to be falling apart. And what I mean by that, on the exaggerated level of people falling apart, there's been more shootings, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. There seems to be more riots, more war talk, more, I mean, if you look at what's going on in the Middle East, there's an awful lot going on. And so, yes, there's a lot going on right now. And it almost... When I think of this, I think of the stories that we hear, you know, about parting the waves when Moses took the people from Egypt, you know, to their new country, how the waves were parted and they walked through and then the waves came over the Pharaoh and his chariots. Now, that's the story. Whether it's exactly like that is another thing. But the point is, there is this, as I see it, a dramatic change. And I am just delighted, Maggie, that you in particular are talking about how things are flowing. And yes, there is a place where people are going to find this flow. And I'm so glad to hear that you are in this flow. Because
You can't believe.
I love it. I'm so delighted for you.
Incredible. Today I had a call from a person that I've been working with selling. I'm working with solar power generators. Well, excuse me, I did say something about the 125,000 gas tanks that I was going to try to power, but that turned out to be a scam. The guy wanted money up front, but never mind about that. Today what happened is that I'm having to fly to Indiana on the 17th. To go meet with a group of people, because you know I'm related to my company is Alternate Energy Buildings, and I want to build off the grid housing.
I love that.
I'm meeting with the whole group of people that are all involved in this already that are going to help me. I've got the buyers. I'm a realtor. I've got the buyers that are waiting for me to bring this in. People are flowing to me by leaps and bounds. It's incredible. I'm in a whirlwind. I'm just amazed. I love it.
Maggie, have you been on our telephone conference where Mother Mary was working with us, bringing in the new consciousness?
Nope, I missed that one.
Richard, why don't you tell Maggie and our listeners about the new consciousness coming in, because this is really related, Maggie.
Well, just very quickly, Maggie, I will have sent you the link last night to that call, which was the Voices from Heaven call last night. And in simple terms, a couple of days ago, Carolyn and I began to work with a new consciousness that began to come forth into the world. And that consciousness we have been working with, essentially, it is the new consciousness that's coming to the planet. And the cherubim as a group have begun to work with that. And it will, as we understand it, begin to expand. It is the consciousness that will see healing and rejuvenation come forth and form the basis for the unfolding of ascension. So that ascension essentially is what it's about. And so it's very powerful and very important. So I suggest you listen to that recording, Maggie, and work with it. And Carolyn, I suggest we get back to your journey, because that's really what this call is meant to be about.
Anyway, Maggie.
Well, the journey is going. Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say blessings to you and your.
Thank you.
Reaping your reward, starting with this, and I love it.
Me too.
Good for you, dear.
I'm extremely happy. I'm in the flow. I'm extremely happy, and I'm glad that 2012 is over with.
Anyway, you enjoy yourself, and Richard and I will continue with the journey.
Thank you so much. Talk
You're
to you all
welcome.
Later. I'll talk again.
You're welcome,
I'll listen
dear.
To the show. Thank you. Bye,
Great.
Guys.
Bye. And what Maggie's call is all about, Richard, is, as I see it, is this explosion. And I do say explosion of, you know, she was working with alternate, what was it? What word would I use? Alternate what, Richard? Sources of energy?
Well, effectively alternate energy associated with housing.
Mm. Yeah. So so many of these things are going to come forth, these new developments, because we're in the beginning of a new consciousness, the ending of an old cycle, the beginning of a new cycle, and we're going to see a lot of things like this. And
sure.
I decided to do this.
Very exciting.
It is exciting. And I'm so glad that Maggie called in to tell us her journey, because those of you out there, you are all going to be in a place for the beginning of your journey too, if it hasn't already begun. And I chalk this up to the new consciousness coming in, because it's going to the very particle of creation, the very particle, and changing what has been here since the beginning of Atlantis, the dark taking over, at least on this planet, and finally coming out of that, going to a new consciousness. It is. It's very exciting. And all of you, perhaps, if it is of interest to bring forth spiritual gifts, you will be doing it also. But I wanted to do the show, as I said earlier, to give you a sense that you can do all these things. And when I started out, I looked at other people, at all the things that they were doing, and it just seemed like such a world away that I could never accomplish it. And if you know my journey, you know that I had a child that died in an automobile accident. And very quickly after he died, he came to me in most exceptional ways. And I knew I was speaking to him, and he was communicating with me. And we had made this arrangement before we even came to this planet in as the individuals that we are. We took this on as he played part of my mission in that respect, because I wouldn't have trusted, I don't think, other people that I didn't know. And so I knew him, and he got me started on this journey. But you see, it was something that we had planned. And that brings me, I wasn't planning on talking about this, Richard, but in a sense, it brings me right to that soul origin. And I want you just to take a little moment about, if you care to, about how these missions come into play. Like, I had this mission with my son that got me started in this whole path, and each person has this. Do you care to take a moment? I know it's a little off topic, but I
think...
Well,
in a way it is, in a way it's not, because it is fascinating how we pre-plan the mission that we unfold in our lifetime. We don't recognize it too readily in this consciousness unless we begin to awaken to these things. But the detail with which we plan our lives is way beyond what we can imagine. I mean, I would say that virtually all of us plan the major events that unfold in our lives, even the negative ones, because we come with a plan to achieve certain things. And indeed, we understand that whilst there are some variables, we understand what those variables are, we understand what the risks are before we come. And we've seen a couple of fascinating examples of that in the Soul Origin and History readings that Carolyn was referring to. There's a fascinating one that we did with, for example, a young child who is suffering from autism. And it came forth in that reading that, firstly, his autism was due to a vaccination, which is much more common than our medical system would like us to believe. But also this child understood before he came, his soul understood that this was a risk. However, he chose to come at that time because, A, the timing from an astrological perspective was the timing that he wanted to be born under so that he could bring forth the skills that he wanted in this lifetime, but also understood that the coming forth of the rejuvenation process would see his autism healed. And I find that fascinating. And we have other examples. We've just been working on one in the last day or so, which is a little like this. The task, scope of the task for the individual was so great that it has put that individual's health under great risk. And she is today quite debilitated. But before she came, she understood that this risk was there, and again understood that with the emergence of rejuvenation and so on, that this would be healed. So it really is quite fascinating stuff. And it's completely invisible to most people because we have been persuaded to be in, for the most part, complete denial of this nature of the human journey.
Richard, would you just tell people, for those who don't know, where they can read these?
Sure. The website is called soulorigin.com. That's A-N-D, not ampersand, soulorigin.com. So just go to the website and you'll see a number of them. Our dear friend Adam has turned into YouTube videos, and the rest of them are there as an audio recording and a text. And I encourage you to listen to the recording itself if it's not in a YouTube form, because there is just so much more you get from listening to the recording that you won't get from reading the text. Carolyn's voice carries so much more information.
Yeah, there's an energy there that people pick up. Thank you, Richard. Yeah, I think if people became a little more aware of the journeys that different souls take, it would be very helpful to them to understand where they are right now. And we found it quite fascinating. I call forth universal consciousness and get to the person's records. And there is the records of their monad. And from that monad comes all of these individual fingers of consciousness that that soul monad has brought forth from the beginning of the time here on this planet. Of course, we do have information where people, we might mention where they've been on other planets doing work, but we don't get into that because the records are just, it would be too long. And so I connected with my son, and he started me on this journey. We did a lot of work together with transferring energy, for instance, in Sedona, brought down energy from the higher planes down to the earth core, and this was helping with this cycle. Now, I think an important issue here is how people do this. And it's a little bit deeper into my journey, but I think using understanding that the brain was divided, we know that there are quadrants in the brain, and there is a right side and a left side, and how we use the right side and the left side. And Richard teaches this on individual calls, and he does a beautiful job. Richard, I think it might be a good idea for you to explain how we use the right side of the brain and how we use the left side, and how we can connect and communicate with other forms of consciousness.
Sure. Well, I'm sure all of our listeners are aware of how the brain is separated into the left and right hemispheres. And again, I'm sure they're likely to be aware that most of us have been very left-brained in this lifetime. I know I was extremely left-brained, having come up through a kind of scientific-type education. I have a PhD in engineering, for goodness sake, and so I was very left-brained kind of character. And really, if you look at the nature of our education system, the nature of the work that most of us do, the violence in so many movies and television, the fear in the news that comes to us and so on, thumping loud music, all of this tends to encourage us into the left side of the brain. It's little wonder we're very left-brained in this world.
Honey, before you can, if I can just stop you for a second, you know,
sure,
some
you
people
can.
might not understand what being left-brain is.
Well, what do you mean exactly? You mean what the left brain focuses on?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I mean.
Well, yeah, the left brain tends to focus on the logical, the analytical, the rational, the judgmental, the planning, all of those kind of things, yeah?
Yes.
And so that tends to be where we have been encouraged to focus in this life. And really, most people are very left brain dominant. And what's interesting is, before the fall in Atlantis, these two hemispheres were much more closely connected, and the left brain was much, much more the servant than it's been encouraged to be in this time. And so the right side of the brain is where our creativity arises, our intuition, our psychic skills, if we have opened those up, our spiritual side, and it's where we hear from other forms of consciousness, where the messages come forth. So that in summary is kind of how they come together or drift apart.
Exactly. I wanted people to understand how these two, well, as best they can, how these two sides function, how society by its very nature pushes people into that logical, scientific side. And there's a lot of people feel that, well, I'm not going to believe it unless I see it. And they are, it holds them back from getting into that right side of the brain and working with, like you say, these intuitive prompts. I didn't mean to interrupt that story, but I...
No, that's okay. And I think the thing that fascinates me as I look at your journey, Carol, and coming back to that thread that I was talking about earlier in terms of how we plan these lifetimes. The thing that fascinates me about your journey so much is how, as you began to travel after Sean crossed over and so on, you began to travel to so many places in the world. And as you did this, you would find yourself with groups who, and those groups contained individuals that were verifying these experiences that began to come forth. So I think it would be fascinating for people to hear a bit about some of that.
Golly, there's so many, I don't know where to start. Okay, I'll start with this one. I if you can picture this, I'm in a boat on the Nile with a group of people. I don't know. I guess it was about 70 people. And at this particular point, I was with two ladies, and we were doing some healing work. I don't know. I don't know if I what had happened on that trip that I needed some healing work. And when that happened, this being came forth, and it was so much like each one of us experienced this in a different perspective. And when we talked about it, we realized that we were all talking about the same individual. I saw this brilliant white light, so brilliant that I couldn't see beyond it. And we were working with energy. Another one heard a lot more of the conversation, and the other lady actually saw the individual. And she didn't know who she was. The color that we saw was this vibrant, kind of like a turquoise. And none of us knew who she was, just that she had come and the three of us had experienced it, and we didn't have a name. We did this work. This energy went into the Nile River all through Egypt and panning out throughout the world. And then she comes back to me, and she's got this papyrus picture, and she says, "This is the lady that we saw." And lo and behold, it was Nefertiti. And I later found out that I was one of the daughters with that little group, Nefertiti and Akhenaten. And other ways, that comes into my mind, one of the things that come into my mind. And then I would run into other people, for instance, who would be a person who worked with Akhenaten. And we would do this little session, and all this information would come out about Akhenaten and his daughters. And I met several of the daughters on different trips. And it would all, like you say, Richard, come into a situation where we were all acknowledging one another, that we were getting truth that was truth and was not a figment of somebody's imagination.
Exactly. And I just find it fascinating how, in a way, you had planned this lifetime so carefully that there were so many of those experiences that came forth to open up your skills and for you to learn to trust them. So many examples. Another one that I find fascinating is your story of working in the Bahamas, which you might like to share.
What aspect of was
Golly. Well, there are a couple of aspects that come to mind. The work with clearing the souls that have been guarding the red crystal.
Oh, yes, and, yes, yes.
And there are several you could share.
Yeah, there was so many. I had taken this trip to the Bahamas. I was working with a woman who set up a lot of trips, who was directed under Master Kuthumi to do these. And I had this cabin that had a balcony, and they stopped at this little island where people went swimming. Wasn't something that appealed to me at the moment, and I was just sitting on this balcony just enjoying things. And this being comes to me and wants me to go below the sand. Well, I didn't know what in the world this was all about, and it was kind of scary. I'm going to go beneath the sand. I'm going to go down in the water, go down beneath the sand. I wasn't quite understanding all of these truths about consciousness and how that there is a part of you that can move through the dimensions, that can move through the earth, that can go down to the center of the earth and get information, that can go up to the star system, the nurseries, and watch the angels bring forth cultivating the stars and guiding them through their creative process. I mean, I didn't know any of this, but for some reason I trusted it. And there was this aspect of me that went down through the water, and lo and behold, it didn't die. I sat on that balcony, went down through the sand, and what I came to was that part of Atlantis beneath the waves, beneath the sand, where the red crystal that Edgar Cayce talked about had was beneath the waters. And the reason that I was to go there is there was a soul, and that soul had been guarding that crystal since the fall of Atlantis, and it was now time for that soul to be liberated. And that is what I did. I went down and liberated this soul, told that soul that it was now time to leave, that she didn't have to stay there with a crystal any longer. And the reason for her being there is the deviant priests were using the energies from this crystal to perform acts that they shouldn't be doing. And so we blessed her for her service, and the soul came up out of the water. And what was so fascinating is I sat on that bench, on that chair on the porch, I saw Mother Mary and a few other spiritual people that we know of come down and greet the soul. And they went up into what I would say the heavens, and I could see this progression. And it was so amazing to sit there and see her taken up through the heavens. Her work was done. She had completed it. And I could actually look in the sky and trace the path that they were taking. It was quite amazing. Is that one of the stories you were talking about, Richard?
That's one of the stories I was talking about. And I just find it fascinating. You really didn't understand why you were there to do that, or that you were there to do that, but it just unfolded at that point in your experience. It was something that you were able to do, but also in its own way was part of your growth in understanding of, you know, what you were here to do and the skills that you had. And I just found it fascinating. I think another too is your experiences in Rome with Julia and so on.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Again, I went on another trip with this individual, and there was a large, very large group, and people branched off into different areas, and I signed up for Rome. Wanted to go somewhere else, but and that's very fascinating, because I wanted to go to another part of Italy with this group, but the places were taken. In other words, there was like three or four places that different people could sign up for, and the place I wanted was another area, and the list was filled. They couldn't take another person. And so I thought, oh, well, I guess I'll go to Rome. Don't really want to go there. I want to go to this other place. And the fact of the matter is when I went, golly, there was so much that happened. But every night, the first time I saw this woman come, I didn't really realize who she was. I found out on the overall scheme that this was Julia Caesar. It was the daughter of Julius Caesar. And she took me on this trip every night that I was with this group. I'd come home And she would tell me a little bit of the story and of this whole thing, which was quite remarkable, with her father and the man that she loved and how she lost the man that she loved. And it was quite a story. And so I got that story when I was in Rome, wrote it all down, thought I would come back and that would be the end of it. But before I left, I worked with two other ladies. Again, we kind of like get together in little groups and, you know, you talk and you do work. And the next thing I knew is that these two ladies also saw the love of Julia's life. They came and we worked with them for a while. And then they saw the two of them wrap around, like entwine with one another. It was a mystical marriage. Went back up to the higher levels. And so, yes, Richard, every time I got involved in these things, it seemed like there were other people there waiting to say, hey, you're not sane. this is really happening. So I saw all their life. I would see in pictures. I would hear the voice. And I got back and I started to communicate with him. And Flavius came forth and he told me his side of the story, which was just incredible. I thought we were going to have a little tiny little love story that, and it turned into a film that I've written. I don't know. It's going to come forth at some time because it's a beautiful story. Writing the book about it, and it was so fascinating because when I was writing this, Flavius would come. And I didn't see the necklace that he was wearing. He had like a chain with a round medallion on it. And I was talking to one of my friends, and when I was talking to her, she saw him. And she says, oh, did you notice the medallion around his neck? And I said, you know, I wasn't paying attention to that. And then I looked at it, and he would like finger the medallion and... What I found out is this whole story was written before I came to Earth. My incarnation, the whole thing was written down. And he was giving me the words that he brought forth that was, you know, the information that was put on this medallion and giving it, using that as a tool to give me the information. So there was another little thing. And then I started researching many of the little things. For instance, I saw Julia in a particular shade, color of her dress, and I did the research and found out the dye that it came from and silk. Yeah, she came with these silk clothes, and I thought, how in the world does silk get to Rome? And then I traced the journey of the silk, how it came out of China, how it was carried on camels. Imagine that, the journey from China to Rome, and how it was so expensive, carried on the back of camels, if you can imagine. And Julius had ordered a piece of silk that had their family emblem on it, and that is what I saw in what Julia was wearing. Quite fascinating. And so all these little details, I mean, I did the research about, like I said, the silk and the colors and the marble that was on the house. And later on that trip when I was in Rome, we passed, we were on a bus, and I said to the guide that we had, what street did we just pass? Because I knew that was the road that you would take to get to Julia's home. And she told me the street that it led into the old portion of Rome, the Appian Way, which would have picked up and gone to her home. So, yeah, there was just so many of these little things. Exciting, isn't it?
It is. And speaking of medallions, why don't you tell the story of St. Helena's medallion, how you came, what that is, how you came to get it.
Oh, golly, yeah. Here I am on this journey with a group of people, went to Israel, and the guide was taking them, we were in Jerusalem, taking them down these steps to a place where there was water that fed the Jewish people. It was their spring. So they all walked down there, and I thought, nah, I don't feel like going down there. There was this little shop at the top. I thought I would just go through that shop. And there were all little things that this man had found in that spring. And so there was the widow's pence, I thought was interesting. And I saw this gold medallion. It was a coin. And as soon as I saw it, I recognized, at least there was a part of me that recognized, that this was St. Helena, that this was a coin that was struck to honor St. Helena and the work that she had done, finding what she called the True Cross. And there was a great deal of work that she had done with Constantine, which most people aren't really familiar with, all the different places that she found and how he built churches and things over these spots. And so the group wasn't too happy with me because I held up this whole group while this owner was trying to do all of these little charges, because he could only, I don't know, do $50 at a time or whatever. And I don't know, the coin was like 700 or whatever. And they were ticked. But they couldn't go off without me, but I brought the coin back. And, of course, we had this whole thing open up with St. Helena and finding out that this was a special coin that was struck for her. There was only this one coin. And my son came and to me later and he said, well, we wanted to get this coin to you. It was some place in some museum that they had called a portrait. They had picked it up, brought it to me through putting it in this spring where this gentleman who had permission from the Israeli government to find these things and sell them, and that is how they got it to me. And it was St. Helena's personal coin. Golly, I could go on stories with St. Helena, how she came into my life.
Why don't you?
Okay. Driving along, I was in business at that point, selling investments, if you can imagine that. And I'm going to this person's house, and I heard this noise. I couldn't figure out what it was, and this car is passing me by, and it is saying, there is a fire in the back of your car. And, of course, that alarmed me. And St. Helena came and told me that everything was going to be okay. Anyway, what had happened is this fire broke out in a wheel that ran over the gas. It was the wheel right next to the gas tank. And the whole thing could have exploded. I was close to the person's house. St. Helena told me everything was going to be okay. So I went to the person's house and I ran in and the guy came out with a hose and put the fire out. It was literally flaming right near the gas tank. I did lead an exciting life, didn't I?
Yes. And why don't you tell one of your Templar stories?
Which one did you have in mind?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe the one on Rhodes would do.
Oh, Rhodes, yes. The island of Rhodes. There was a big battle there, and the Templars were protecting the people. And I had this vision. I went into this church, and I had a vision of the leader of the Templars at that particular point in time was sitting on this, this beautiful chair inside of this chapel. And I recognized myself. I was a Templar, And I was kneeling in front of this gentleman, and he was giving me his blessings. And we were, I was the commander of the troops there in that lifetime. And he was blessing us to go out and literally save the island and the people. The long and the short of it was, the Templars didn't win that one, unfortunately. They were beaten, and, well, that's a long story. But one of the interesting things about that, when I went in this building, as that commander, I was injured. And I saw the place where that Templar was nursed to health by one of the... how do you pronounce that? Hospitallers?
Hospitaliers, yes.
Yeah. And this little alcove behind the bed where all of the Templars' possessions would have been stored as they were healing. Well, it so happened that on that trip, my roommate, if you can imagine, were one of those that nursed the Templars back. We had a grand time talking about that. She remembered that lifetime as being one of those healing monks that worked with them. Now, could she have been the one that worked with that commander? Who knows? But it was interesting. Like you're talking about how you meet these people. Is that a good enough story?
That's good enough. But I think the thing that's fascinating about this, and really why I was interested to have this unfold a little, is really the journey that you've walked, Carolyn, way before you really started this work in earnest, you might say, was so amazing. The lifetimes that opened up in front of you that gave you an understanding of really who you've been, but not only did they open up in your experience, but they got verified by all these people around you, just as you've been saying. And I just find it amazing. Maybe you should, for example, share your – well, actually, I guess the story of the thing doesn't really come back to your journey in this lifetime, perhaps. But it kind of relates to – the amazing array of past life experiences that we've started to touch on. I think that one is kind of interesting also.
Well, when I heard about that, I wasn't too happy on that one. I went on a trip to one of the islands in the area of the Bahamas, and we went through this whole study course, and the person that I had gone with, that I was studying under, we only had like maybe 10 people, very small group. And she worked with Archangel Michael, and she drew this picture of Atlantis. That was one of her lifetimes. And If you know the story that Edgar Cayce gives of how the deviant priest turned, was creating, but they created things of, they called them things, a combination between an animal and a person. And they worked in a test tube and created these beings using the creative force, using the red crystal, and created these monstrosities. And so what had to happen is someone had to come to Earth, be one of those things, be healed from being a thing, and then the birth process was changed. It would be changed in the sense that we know a child being born is through a woman, and a thing cannot be created any longer. And I guess my hand must have been up all the time on the other side, because I sure did volunteer for a lot of duty that wasn't so pleasant. And what came forth was this whole lifetime about how I was a thing and how that thing had its appendages removed. In other words, it was half goat and half man. And the people that worked in the temple, beautiful, how they worked on this thing, and this whole story evolved. And yeah, the 10 of us found out from Archangel Michael who we were in that lifetime, and we're getting to the very end, and I thought, oh, I bet I'm the thing. They touched me on the shoulder before I came into this lifetime, and yeah, I came in as this goat man.
Well, the other piece of that that's really fascinating is that everybody that was on that trip, if I recall, had a lifetime in Atlantis at that time.
Yes.
All of the group. And only people who had lifetimes to share in that, had been in Atlantis, only people who qualified enrolled for that trip.
Yeah, that was quite fascinating. And the reason that came to pass is because those 10 people had agreed that they would all come back when we did and share our story with one another. So it was sort of a trip of understanding who we were, understanding what we had done, and we did. There were 10 people, and they all came back, which is quite fascinating.
Truly. And so, my friends, one of the reasons I was keen to do this is most, if not all of you, will not have heard perhaps of any of these experiences of Carolyn's, of the lifetimes, of how these validations have occurred in her life, how other people have turned up on the trips that she went on, and there would be 10 times the number that she has shared here. Where in so many ways she got validation of who and what she was, how she had planned all of this before she came. And so in its own way, this has been one of the threads that, for me anyway, has kept me going through this incredibly difficult journey that the two of us have been on this last 4 or so years, this amazing trail of preparation, if you will, that Carolyn put in place before she ever came. So I find it fascinating, really.
What I find fascinating is how you dodged things. This was supposed to be my journey and your journey. You haven't said anything about your journey.
Well, my journey is kind of interesting, really, in the sense that I have very little past life recall at all. As I mentioned, Carolyn would readily recall 30 or so of hers, and really, however we planned this, my understanding of where I've walked has really only emerged as a result of my work with Carolyn, because she's been aware of these things and she sees them and reads them so amazingly. And I can only look back at my journey in this life and in a way see how it unfolded. Having built a very kind of technical base, a very left-brained experience, and built a successful business, you might say, only to realize that really didn't mean a lot to me in my life. There was something else about me that I needed to understand, and I remember that moment of realization that all I'd been creating in my life really didn't fill this hole that I felt inside me, a hole that I hadn't realized was there. It was kind of like this bomb went off inside me. And the outcome of that was I deconstructed my life. And from that moment on, pretty much found that anything that I tried to do using my left brain simply didn't work. And here I was, having built a successful business with a couple of other guys that, it was about a $25 million business and, very successful business in so many ways, so many aspects of life. And nothing that I would do using my left brain would work. The only thing that would get me forward was to follow this intuitive sense. And so it was like crawling forward, like inching forward, you might say, through this intuitive sense. About the only thing that worked for me in any sense for so long was this working with this beautiful lady who was a Reiki healer and became my Reiki teacher. And it was the only thing that in any sense gave me any sense of relief. And I began to experience an intuitive awareness when I worked with her. And one day I said to her, you know, I have a sense that all this craziness in my life has some connection to Archangel Michael. I knew she worked with him. And she said, based on the shiver that just went through me when you said that, I suspect that's true. And that really is what led me to connect with Carolyn, because I knew she was doing these conference calls with Archangel Michael. And we had the opportunity to ask questions on those calls. And I asked a question through Carolyn of Archangel Michael. And I can't even remember what the question was or what the answer was, but I just was absolutely blown away that this answer that came back was so clearly about me and told me things about me that I knew no one living knew other than me. I was just blown away. And so that really kind of started, in a way, the connection that Carolyn and I have built over the last few years. And Richard, I think we're out of time.
We are. We're 2 minutes over. See, you get a man opened up, ready to talk, and the ball dropped, and it's over. Good night, my friend.
I'm not
friends.
Touching that. Good night.
Till the next time. This is Carolyn Evers.